Hello and welcome to the Mejlis Podcast, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's current affairs talk show focusing on Central Asia. I'm Bruce Pannier, host of the Mejlis and author of the weekly Central Asia in Focus newsletter. Kazakhstan's finance ministry last week published a list of organizations and individuals whom the ministry said are receiving funding from foreign sources. The government previously prepared legislation on this, so it was not a surprise, but it was still alarming as the finance ministry's move echoed similar actions in Russia that eventually paved the way for Russian authorities to enact a foreign agents law that led to the closure of many civil society groups, rights organizations, and independent media outlets that were receiving foreign funding. Is Kazakhstan following Russia's example? To discuss all this, I'm joined by Mira Rietman, Senior Central Asia Researcher for Human Rights Watch, Ivar Dale, Senior Policy Advisor at the Norwegian Helsinki Committee, and Yevgeny Zhovtis, Veteran Rights Activist and Director of the Kazakhstan International Bureau for Human Rights and Rule of Law. Thank you all for joining me. Yevgeny, what's your reaction to the posting of this database?
I think that we have to look at this situation from two perspectives, legal and political. Legally, you're absolutely right. This list is the continuation of the legislation which was adopted in 2016. And it obliges everybody, commercial entities, non-governmental organizations, civic organizations, and individuals to report to the tax committee of the Ministry of Finance about any foreign funding, if this funding is aimed to three goals or to following three aims. Number one, is any kind of legal aid. Number two is any kind of polls of population, sociological polls and other polls. And finally, any kind of collection, this analysis of and dissemination of any information. If any entity or individual get any funding from foreign sources for these aims or for these goals, he or she or the entity have to report to the tax committee in 10 days after receiving such money, and once in quarter, and in last time these legislation provisions were changed, once in a half a year, about any spending of this money. Thus, it was legislation was adopted in 2016. But for 7 years, they were not referring to this in this way. And only several months ago, the Minister of Finances issued the decree that this register or this list should be compiled and should be publicized for so-called transparency purposes. But it clearly has it do not have any legal consequences up to last week, because this week, we find out that one of the banks decided to examine one of its clients because this client is in this list. At this point, finally, I do not see any other serious legal threats in that regard. But politically, it's clearly the list to discredit and to stigmatize especially civil organizations or journalists who were also included in this list, to stigmatize them and to discredit them politically. This is, at this point, this is, from my point of view, the key goal of this list to be published.
Okay, thank you. Ivar, your organization is clearly a foreign-funded organization. The government is saying, as Yevgeny mentioned, that this is to build trust and confidence in the public in these organizations. Everybody knows that you're foreign-funded. I mean, what does this mean to your organization?
Well, I've looked through the list that they published, and the first feeling after initial surprise is that it's a kind of a compliment, of course, to be on a list together with an organization like the Kazakhstan International Bureau for Human Rights and Rule of Law, because it's one of the most well-respected organizations, not just in Kazakhstan, but in all of Central Asia and even in the OSCE region, working on human rights. So, it's a good list to be on in that sense. But of course, after the amusing side of it aside, we also see it like Zhovtis says, that this is clearly intended as a way to stigmatize civil society organizations, to harass them. We are, our representative office based in Almaty is registered with Kazakh authorities. That's why we end up on this list. But I mean, ultimately, we're a foreign organization. We're based in Oslo. But I'm more concerned about what this could mean for local organizations in Kazakhstan. This is a type of harassment that the Kazakh authorities should not be doing. I think it could lead to security issues, perhaps for some of the staff members. It's very strange that they choose to do this, especially when you think about how much Kazakhstan worries about its external reputation. You know, this is to be copying what is clearly a Russian practice, the foreign agents law in Russia. To be copying that sort of practice and bringing it into Kazakhstan, I think it's very unfortunate.
Okay, thank you. Vera, you know, your organization is not on this list, but how do you view this move? I mean, especially in light of what we've seen in Russia. I mean, what does this say to you?
Well, it strikes me as a very deliberate move on the part of the Kazakh government to publish this registry, in the sense that it has the same purpose of stigmatizing the groups that are on the list. And we've heard that it's human rights organizations, it's independent journalists, it's other service providers. I saw even a shelter that provides support to women on this list. It serves the same purpose as adopting an actual law without incurring the fallout from adopting the law. And the question now remains, what is going to happen? Okay, this is a first step. It is an identification of individuals and organizations that receive foreign funding. As we hear that it's a stigmatizing list. But what comes next? And what I fear is that this is a step towards exerting further controls and further restrictions on an already highly restricted space for human rights activism, and really any kind of exercising of freedom of association by independent groups. The government perceives independent voices as a threat, and this is just yet another way that they are seeking to control the space. And what will come next is really quite concerning. And I think, I hope that everybody that is observing the human rights space in Kazakhstan will keep a very close eye on what we'll see coming out of the publication of this list. The list itself perhaps is not, you know, doesn't have legal consequences, as Evgeny Alexandrovich was saying, but it is a step towards further action. And that's what we need to be all carefully observing in the near future.
Okay, thank you. You know, Ivar, if you could tell us, I know that you released a statement today in conjunction with also, along with Yevgeny's organization and others, but you mentioned this outlet Echo and the problems. Can you tell me a little bit about what happened with them?
I think it was Yevgeny who mentioned Echo.
Oh, okay. Still, I'm kind of curious. Okay, then I'll get to Yevgeny. What I want to talk about, you had mentioned that there was an organization that had problems just this week already with the Noor Bank. One, I would like that explained a little bit more, but I'm curious, has anything like this ever happened before? I mean, you said the law, of course, it was passed in 2016. Was there ever any move similar to what just happened with Echo this week?
Yes, it already happens, not in this way, but we all of us remember 2020 when the seven prominent human rights organizations, including Echo and our organization, we were, we get the warning and then they get the decisions of the local tax bodies, which were claiming that we have some kind of discrepancies in reporting about this funding of our, for this legal aid, foreign funding for dissemination of information. And they tried even to suspend our activities for 3 months and impose heavy fines. Finally, and it was clearly the political move. It was not, of course, the legal move. It was political move. Politics was behind that. And then they decided to step back because of the huge, let's say, criticism from the side of the EU, US, even from AITI, this Extractive Industries Transparency Initiative. And they tried to step back, and even we won a number of cases in the courts, and this case in the early 2001 ended successfully for us. But it was already such move. I want to mention another important point that several weeks ago, one of the politologists and some kind of researchers close to the government, he published, his name is Daniyar Shimbaev, And he published the interview where he said that the government is planning, and it will be good from his point of view, planning to look after any influencers, any organizations or people who could influence internal politics being supported from outside of the country. That it was already in that way aired by one of the close to the government politologists. What happens with the ECHO? It was clearly because we have the document according which the bank referred to this list, to this registry, and they said that they want to examine where this group is spending money which they get from their bank because of this list and referring to the law on countering extremism and terrorism. That it clearly, even if it is not legally, let's say, so have any legal consequences, because it's only the list about those who reported to the tax bodies about funding for these goals. But it's already have some kind of practical implications in relation to this ECHO group, organization. These are the organizations which is dealing with the election monitoring observation. They are preparing election observers and so on. We will see. We will try to challenge this. We will assist them with some kind of legally to respond to these actions of the bank. But it's clearly how this list was already used, at least by the bank. And we think that it's not the bank on their own. It's somebody who are behind them. It could be intelligence or any other state structures which are behind this move against their organization.
Okay, thank you. Ivar, I'll get back to you, though, because I do want to hear more about your statement today. But also, how do you personally read the situation with ECHO? Is this a warning, a sign of what's coming?
Yeah, of course, it definitely could be. Kazakhstan has, it has a long history of curbing freedom of association and of assembly and association. This is like one of the main topics that Kazakhstan has been criticized for in the UN and several other places. So, of course, when we see a list like this, we read it immediately as, okay, this may be sign of something something to come, that they're going to try to put pressure on civil society. ECHO, of course, yeah, as Yevgeny mentioned, it's a elections observation organization, which is also worrisome, because if there's one thing that Kazakhstan needs right now is to be able to carry out free and fair elections. The OSCE observer missions, both at the parliamentary and the presidential elections previously, said that the elections were marred by a lack of choice, and that, you know, Kazakhstan still has a long way to go to become a democracy. So, the statement that is being released later today, it comes from the International Federation for Human Rights, FIDAJ, where the Kazakhstan International Bureau for Human Rights and Rule of Law is a member, and the Norwegian Helsinki Committee is a member. So this is an umbrella organization based in Paris, and they'll be releasing this in many languages later today. And it says basically the same things that we've just been through, that it's that we consider this to be an attempt of stigmatizing and harassing civil society in Kazakhstan, and urging Kazakh authorities to guarantee freedom of association in the country. And we have also just sent an email to the embassy of Kazakhstan in Oslo, here in Norway, to ask them to please explain the reason why did they publish such a list and what's the meaning of all this. So we hope to get some kind of official statement back from them. But what we saw already in the official comments to this is that they it's intended to increase the citizens' trust in the government, I think it was, and it's in the interest of transparency, which I think is a very strange way of explaining why they would publish such a list. Because if there's one thing that you need, if you're talking about transparency, then, you know, Kazakhstan is quite far down on Transparency International's list of, corruption perceptions index. And I think their efforts should be instead be thrown at trying to lower the level of corruption in society. That would be increase, I think, the citizens' trust in the government. And even further, you know, you still have members of the Kazakh elite who have enormous palaces in cities like Geneva and in London, unexplained wealth. That's a matter of transparency. Or for that matter, to explain, you know, the events in January 2022, what were the reasons behind it, what really took place behind the scenes. If the government of Kazakhstan came out with good explanations about that, that I think would increase the citizens' trust in the government much more than them stigmatizing and harassing civil society organizations like Šoltes' organization or like ours.
Now, curious that you mentioned, both the unexplained wealth abroad and the events of January 2022. These seem to be things that the Kazakh government doesn't want a lot of information spread about. Do you see a connection between that and what's happening with this list?
Of course, yeah, because civil society organizations are the ones who've been urging them to release information about what really happened. And they're the ones who have been criticizing the authorities for cases of ill treatment, torture in custody during the mass arrests. All of this is, there's a connection between human rights organizations' activities and information that the authorities maybe don't want to become public.
Okay, thanks. Mira, I know that you're a Central Asian expert, not a Russian expert, but, you know, just before we get too much further along in the conversation, what about this echoes things that with Russian foreign agents law, for the benefit of our audience who might not have followed the Russian foreign agent law. What do you see happening in Kazakhstan that reminds you of what happened in Russia?
Well, can I actually, before we move on to your question, just sort of pick up on something that Ivar said about why this is happening? Because I think it is important to put this into the broader context of repressions and restrictions on civil society space. You know, the publication of this registry is not, it's not an isolated sort of event, or it's not happening in a vacuum. You know, we heard from Yevgeny Sandorovich about the attempts to suspend human rights organizations several years ago. But really, if we go back, we can look at laws that have been adopted to restrict the activities of trade unions. We have restrictive legislation regarding religious groups. We have a lot of restrictions on independent media. We know that political opposition, genuine political opposition groups, can't get registered. And so I just want to highlight that this is a part and parcel of much broader restrictions. It's the latest development, but it's certainly not happening on its own. And in that sense, perhaps there is a parallel with Russia. I think it was 2012, and I'm not a Russia expert, so I'm not going to get into so many details that they're widely publicized. But where there was an initial adoption of a foreign agents law, and then we have seen over the years how that law led to additional changes in the law and additional restrictions, such that now you have basically the entire decimation of the space for human rights organizations, and pretty much anybody, I believe it's even anyone who is individuals who come under the influence of others outside. It also of outside of Russia, and it also has. It has ramifications for people who speak about Russia's war on Ukraine. If we take the Russian example, we can see the slippery slope where you start off with a law that is restrictive on its face, but how that law then opens the door to introducing additional restrictions. And that's why it's so important that right now, when we are in Kazakhstan, and we have the publication of this registry that identifies many, many individuals and organizations that work in the civic space, that work to improve Kazakhstan's human rights record, that work providing services and really cater to Kazakh people, that Kazakhstan's partners speak out about the problem, like how problematic it is that Kazakhstan has taken the step although the claim is transparent, for transparency's sake, you know, publishing a list without any context, just indicating that these are individuals and groups that are receiving foreign funding, you know, it really harkens to painting them in a very negative, stigmatizing light. And it needs to be addressed head on. We can't wait until Kazakhstan adopts a foreign agents law to address how this is problematic for freedom of association, how this is discriminatory, how this is stigmatizing. It should happen right now. And so I really, you know, I encourage anyone who's, you know, who's listening to this, this discussion to think about how concern can be raised with the Kazakh government right now and get the message across that falling further down this slippery slope is not in Kazakhstan's interests. You know, it doesn't align with Kazakhstan's reform pledges. It doesn't align with the UN Charter. It doesn't align with its aspirations to be recognized on the global stage. And so I hope that this can be stopped before essentially the ball gets rolling too far along.
Okay, thank you. And a reminder, we're talking about the Kazakh Foreign Ministry's recent publication of a list of organizations and individuals receiving foreign funding and what that means to such people and organizations working inside Kazakhstan. And my guests are Ivar Dali, Senior Policy Advisor at the Norwegian Helsinki Committee, Yevgeny Zhovtis, Veteran Rights Activist and Director of the Kazakhstan International Bureau for Human Rights and Rule of Law, and Mira Rietman, Senior Central Asia Researcher for Human Rights Watch. Yevgeny, let me ask you about the timing of this. You know, your organization, in fact, just marked its 30-year anniversary literally 1 month ago today. And so you've been working there for 30 years. Why now do they need to publish such a list or to even have such a list?
I think that there is probably no such kind of political motivation for that. It's technical. Because according to this order of the or decree of the Minister of Finance, they are planning to publish this list after the organization have reported. And as the time for reporting is half a year, that the reports were submitted in July. In August, they were verifying. And in September, they published this list. But what is, I want to echo what already Ivar and Mira said that the publication of this list has, of course, this kind of psychological purpose because they're referring to the traditional Soviet sentiments that the foreign funding is something wrong or foreign funding is something suspicious or foreign funding, it means some kind of, interference in the internal affairs. That they're referring to this general official sometimes, probably it is not expressed so directly like in Russia, but officially, of course, they were, stating that we are, trying to prevent any kind of foreign influence in our internal politics. And secondly, of course, the public, because we already have seen that when this list was published in some social networks, some pro-governmental bloggers or some kind of people who are working for the national security agencies or probably some kind of these so-called bots and trolls, they start to attack the organizations which were included in this list. That now it's technically it's right after the half a year and after the reports were provided to the tax bodies. And what is interesting, if you're looking at this list, there is a number of organizations and groups which should not be listed. I will give you the example of Federation of Trade Unions, which is also included. And according to our constitution, they could not get any foreign funding at all because it's prohibited, like for the political parties. Or you could see the number of the representations of different foreign funds, like Rosa Luxemburg Fund or some others. And this is absolutely technically because according to Kazakh law, these representations, like the Norwegian Health Committee, they are registered in Kazakhstan as the Kazakhstan entity. And technically, they are receiving the money from their main offices. And this money is considered as foreign funding of their own representations. And that, you could see there Deloitte or you could see there even the Gazprom. That's technically they put everything together and some organizations have not been included, whom I know who are getting the foreign funding for these goals which are stipulated in the tax code, this Article 29 of the tax code. That I could not say that there is, we could think about when now. Now it's technically after the 1 year, half a year reporting. But the idea behind, typically political, to stigmatize, to discredit, and to use this at certain point, but it will be needed for political purposes.
Ibar, I know it's early. They just published a list last week, but what kind of obstacles do you see arising to your organization's work in Kazakhstan from this publication of this list? We've gone through some of it, but I'm just curious where you think this is headed for your organization.
Well, hopefully it's not headed anywhere bad. I think, as Joftis mentions, it's a bit funny how that we are included. It's obviously the Norwegian Helsinki Committee has funding from Norway. So that wasn't a great surprise to anyone. And it's it appeals to these, as he called it, Soviet sentiments, that you just make a list of people who are receiving foreign funding. And that in itself is something suspicious. I'm more worried about the local organizations because, as a Norwegian organization, we have, support from the Norwegian MFA. I think that it would take a lot more for the Kazakh authorities to try to harass our office than it would take them to harass local organizations. So I'll be watching more closely the way that local organizations are treated. Properly local organizations, but I'm also I'm thinking about how this why bring in these kinds of Soviet types of methods right now. It's not a good look for Kazakhstan. You know, Kazakhstan used to always say when they were confronted with poor democracy record that, well, look, we're a young country, we still have a long way to go. But Kazakhstan is not a young country anymore. It's over 30 years old, and it's has a certain standing internationally. And so I think it just looks very strange. Why is Kazakhstan doing these kinds of things, this kind of literally stigmatizing and harassment of civil society? It's a bad look for Kazakhstan, and they should stop it.
Okay, thank you. Mira, President Tokayev was in the United States last week and met with the American president. He's in Germany today. Meeting with the top German officials, and the message is more cooperation, but if you're an NGO or thinking of helping out some of the groups in civil society in Kazakhstan right now, and you're in the United States or you're in Germany, did Kazakhstan just draw a line about what kind of cooperation they're really looking for? Is, don't help out our people working for better rights and greater transparency, from media outlets and just stick with trade?
I'd like to think not. I mean, the result of Russia's long experience of the foreign agents law there does sort of inform people working in this space about the consequences. And so I'd like to think that anybody who's looking at Kazakhstan, supporting Kazakhstan and its democratic development or human rights record will understand sort of the context in which this registry was published. Because Kazakhstan's human rights record is extremely poor and civil society in Kazakhstan is embattled. And I think, we're not a local organization in Kazakhstan, but I am unsettled at the publication of this list. I can imagine all the more so for local groups and individuals whose names were put on this list, how unsettled they are feeling at the moment. And so if anything, this should embolden those who are looking at Kazakhstan to support Kazakhstan, to continue to support and continue to find ways to raise concerns about what's going on, and also increase their support, if anything, to groups that are on the ground. So that's what I hope will be the takeaway, that anybody observing Kazakhstan will see through the intention of this list, of the publication of this list, which is to stigmatize and discredit. To the contrary, to see the really good work that's happening on the ground in Kazakhstan by a whole range of actors who stand to be affected if this list is indeed the beginning of something more negative to come.
Okay, thank you. You know, we're getting toward the end here, because, and it is Friday. I promised I would let everybody go pretty soon. But so time for last comments. Anything I missed that you want to say? But Ivar, I was kind of wondering, you know, your thoughts on what's next. Are you surprised at this list being published? And what are your feelings about what that means for not just your organization, but all the organizations in Kazakhstan that receive foreign funding?
I was surprised initially, yes, because it seems like it's just a strange time for Kazakhstan to be doing something like this. If anything, you know, you're looking at Russia and the war in Ukraine and these kinds of methods that the Putin regime uses against civil society have been so discredited, and that type of society like that the Putin regime represents, it, that's a sinking ship that Kazakhstan does not want to be aboard. So I don't understand why would anyone in their right mind copy these kinds of practices or legislation from Russia at a time like this. But of course, then you think about it again and you think, well, I mean, Kazakhstan does have a long history of trying to suppress opposition parties, civil society. It's not a surprise at the same time. So, I'm hoping that this is a type of mistake. First, I thought it must be a mistake. Maybe somebody published it by, they didn't intend to, they pressed the wrong button. But now I see, you know, after a few days have passed, we started seeing that, okay, this really is on purpose, because they're making comments saying strange things that it should be to increase the citizens' trust in the government and so on. So I would just appeal to Kazakh authorities to stop this this type of harassment of civil society and move in a much more in a more positive direction.
Okay, thank you, Mira. Were you surprised? What should we understand from this move?
No, I wasn't surprised. In fact, I thought it was very consistent with how Kazakhstan does things very purposefully, but without trying with while avoiding trying to fall the fallout that accompanies very negative developments. So I go back to what I started off saying, which is that this was a very, you know, this is not the adoption of a foreign agent's law, that Kazakhstan observes what's going on around it. It saw what was happening in Georgia earlier this year. It saw when there was a proposal there to adopt a foreign agents law. I'm sure that it is keeping a close eye on the progression and response to the proposal to adopt a foreign agents law in Kyrgyzstan. And so this is a very sneaky way of having a similar outcome, which is to identify groups that are involved in independent and critical activities that are independent and critical of the government, identify them as recipients of foreign funding. And this harkens back to what both Ivar and Yevgeny Alexandrovich were talking about in terms of the Soviet association of you know, being a traitor or a spy. And so, you know, we have an outcome and that stigmatizes these groups without the scandal of the adoption of a piece of legislation. And so I just, you know, I will go back to the earlier point that I made, that it can't be too soon that Kazakhstan's partners raise concern about the publication of this registry, that there is a very clear message that is relayed to the government of Kazakhstan at the very senior top levels of government, that this is not consistent with Kazakhstan's reform agenda. It is not consistent with its aim to be a participant on the global stage, that the time to cut it short is now. To withdraw, you know, the publication of the list would be the best, but certainly to stop any further negative consequences that could arise when others get the idea to build upon the publication of a registry like this. So I hope that Kazakhstan partners, you know, you mentioned that there's been quite a high number of high level visits that have happened in even the last week and a half. But that sort of top level engagement is, you know, it's likely to continue. There is increased interest in Central Asia, increased interest in Kazakhstan. And so there are opportunities to relay very important human rights messages alongside those talks about trade and economy and security. And I hope that those opportunities will be seized upon and that Kazakhstan will get the message before we see a further deterioration in the space for human rights activism in the civic space.
I think Mira used a good word, sneaky. And it reminded me of a report that we did some 10 years ago about Kazakhstan called Cunning Democracy. And, she said, uses the expression that to avoid the fallout of oppressive practices, which is exactly what Kazakhstan is, has always done, is that it tries to avoid getting criticized for oppressive practices by using bureaucracy. So it'll set up various laws and regulations that make it seem as if they're not really violating international human rights standards when they are.
Okay, thank you both. Yevgeny, last word goes to you. One, are you surprised? And two, what should we be watching for next? I mean, what are you concerned is the next move?
I think that we are watching some kind of developments from two perspectives. Number one, from outside, because I could also echo what Mira said and what Ivar said, that we are witnessing that the nature of the regime, the nature of the people who are in power, is the same in Russia or here. The people are coming from the Soviet past with some kind of conspirological theories, a lot of xenophobia and so on and so on. Even if they are trying to maintain good relations with the West, they're very suspicious because they were not elected. They were self-appointed. They're staying in power for 30 years. And that they're looking at the outside world as the, to a certain extent, with some kind of suspicion. And they are occupied with the Russian type of mentality. They are relying on the same post-Soviet institutions like judiciary or law enforcement or prosecutor's offices or intelligence, which were not in reality reformed, and which are looking at the outer world through the Russian lenses, through the Russian type of lenses or Soviet type of lenses. That on one hand, they are looking at all these things with the suspicion, and this is their way of reaction. Number two, inside the country, look that last 2 or 3 years, they are cracking down on opposition. They are cracking down on the independent voices. They are cracking down on civic activists, which have any mobilizing potential. And they are looking at the NGOs, especially the NGOs which are critical and which are independent, also with the suspicion that it's in line of the general internal and external political context where this government is reacting on that and other problems and try to consolidate the power. That I think that a lot of things will depend on the outcome of the Russian-Ukrainian war, what happens in Kremlin, what will be the relations between the West and China. There is a lot of things for this region. I agree with Mira that there is more and more interest in the region and in Kazakhstan in particular. But I am not so optimistic. I think that, yes, the international community, the U.S., the EU, have certain kind of capacity, and Mr. Takayev now have been in the U.S., now he is in Germany, to try to, let's say, to call it, to urge them to refrain from such kind of actions. But I'm not so optimistic, because unless this regime political will be not changed and transformed, and the institutions were not transformed, we could still expect this type of reaction, this type of attitude. It's again, it's a Soviet type of understanding of the outer world and their internal political, let's say so, ideas behind all these moves. But anyway, we survived through these 30 years. We have to still to fight and to ask the international community to support us.
Okay, well, thank you very much. Let's all hope that this doesn't go any further than it already has. But if it does, I'll be happy to have you all back on the show again. But thanks for being here. So thank you, Yevgeny and Mira and Ivar for being on the program. And a big thank you, as always, to Nathan Shoemaker, our Mejlis podcast producer in Washington, D.C. And a reminder, you can subscribe to the Mejlis podcast or the Central Asia in Focus newsletter by visiting Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's website at rfarl.org. That's all. Thank you. And we'll be back next week. Bye-bye.